Hi, guys. Here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil, like a lot of it. Yep, that's good. Then I stare at a red light. It's the kind that helps your cells positively glow. Oh, wow, really bright, okay. Next, I take an ice bath. That's how you melt your fat and fix your, I don't know, other stuff. Ooh, yep, feeling super healthy. Can't fit my toes. Breakfast is raw liver. Okay, here we go. Oh, real good.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League with Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh. On the
radio. 30. I'm on right now. I don't believe you.
You boys in line.
40, he's got the fly ball rate. I mean,
don't they say power is the last thing that develops too? So there's more power in that bat.
This is so frustrating. Yeah. He's 22 years old. He's 22. Cutting strikeouts, lifting the ball. Oh my gosh. Dude, a touch more pull. This guy goes 35-35, and we're like, who cares if he hit 255?
Okay, so let's hone it in then. This was Bogman's player that was difficult to manage as far as ranks and value. John, what is your value on Bobby Witt then? Do you have any concerns or are you definitive?
I feel very strongly about him as a first round pick. But again, I do like to rein it in because I'm very much still about track record. For me, micro greater than sign micro, macro over micro. And I would rather have Kyle Tucker in the first. I think he's a more of an established hitter. I think the contextual environment is a little bit stronger. But once those like power speed guys are dried up, I'm taking Witt before I'm taking, even like Vlad Guerrero. You know what I mean? Like,
What about Bobby versus Mookie?
I'd rather have, that's a really good one.
Yeah, I know. Probably, that's where I have him. I have him one spot ahead of Mookie, I don't know. I like dance with that.
I think I want Bobby Witt for the steals at third. The flexibility that gives you, because again, you're not really sacrificing much in terms of power. We're all expecting 20 to 25 home runs. I don't think he's going to hit 40, but if you give me a 25-4 with a pop at 35 bags in the first round, you just can go any which way you want later on. You won't feel pressed to have to draft. Again, because you mentioned outfield is kind of shallow, you won't have to sacrifice maybe as much as far as quality hitting profile to get those steals.
Yeah, it's interesting. I got Mookie over there. Mookie, also, if he plays second base, could be really interesting in the year. There's a little bit of a safety net in there, but I'm a believer in Bobby Witt, and I have him as a first rounder. All right, so here is my number one guy. And part of it comes about that I have him higher, I feel like, than everybody. And
no, not true.
Oh, yeah, not every single person, but I have him very high. And it sometimes become about a question where you start to think like, okay, where am I? Am I too far gone? And it's Teoscar Hernandez. Teoscar, who is through the roof on any hard hit metric you're looking for. 95 percentile X slug, 98 percentile hard hit, X woba up, barrel percentage up. What's his problem? It's K rates. He almost pushed 30% this past year, 28.4, which was a raise from the previous year. He's in the lower percentiles of walk and K rates and whiff rates, which make him a lot more susceptible to bad swings that he's not going to be able to hold up during any bad period of time, which I think would be a worry. But hit 25 homers, almost hit 270 this past year in 500 at bats, and is going to be going into a lineup where he's going to be, there's not protection. I mean, you're better set in your other spot, but you're going to be able to go and play around Julio Rodriguez. I feel like Teoscar is going to be able to thrive in maybe even more of an RBI situation. He only had 77 RBIs this past year. I think he could push 90 plus, and projections are not in that favor. They're just kind of in a repeating mode, except though, all projection systems have him beating his home run numbers from last year, but everything else is kind of in line on a 251 batting average. But this is where I struggle because I've got him inside my top 50. He's almost unanimously outside the top 60 in every other format. Maybe positionally I'm like a little bit closer, but in every place that you go, this is where he's at. I sit on the highs of NFBC or Fantasy Pros or something like that. So sometimes it's like a questioning of myself, but the position is so tough. I have moved him around multiple spots, John, and I don't know your take on Teoscar. Do you find him difficult at all, or are you pretty stuck in, you know, he doesn't offer a lot of stolen bases and he has a strikeout risk?
No, the thing I'm finding difficult is not taking him too early. And I think maybe that's something we should have mentioned too, right? With these volatile players, when there are ones that you do like, because I am into Teoscar, is he's a real perceived value for me. And I think this is going to get into something interesting. We could do it really quick because that's really my take on Teoscar. He's really, really good. The batted ball quality is just absolutely through the roof. You know, played a better than 500 X slug. He had a 10% blast rate, right? A double-digit barrel rate is good. Blast are the ideal subset, right? That barrel of a barrel. He is so good. The reason why he's being knocked on boards, guys, is the perception of the park factor stuff. And again, park factor stuff is really wonky. Not only is it really wonky, the people that are smart with it tell you that it changes year over year. And then we had this gigantic humidor change. Okay.
Yeah, the ball too. Yeah.
See, right. Well, again, people are talking about changing the ball. I've been under the working thesis that the ball is the same. It's the way it reacts to the humidor that is giving us the different results, right? Because that is kind of the idea of it is even if the ball were X the same, we know they have different variants, Goldilocks, stupidity, whatever. But if you treat them differently, meaning the storage and how they're kept, they will have different reactions. And then, of course, the different cities have different dew points and all this other weird stuff. But the idea is this. If you look at Seattle's park factor, all the three-year rolling average on Savant that people love, it's like bottom five everywhere, just blue terribleness. If you look at last year, because that's what I'm doing, I'm looking at last year, and I'm ignoring park factor because I don't understand it. I'm using the things that I do understand. So I've been using home run per barrel with the split handedness. Okay, so I'm evaluating parks by that handed hitter, home run per barrel percentage. Seattle, top five last year in home run per barrel percentage. That is, man, if I'm onto something, let's say, that's a pretty big deal because the reason why people are dinging him, I kind of have a somewhat data-backed case against, right? A data-backed counter. So the thing is, generally, we're arguing about player skill. Here, we're saying the opposition is saying, well, I like Teoscar, but he's not going to do well there.
They're saying, what about the dew point?
But right, what about the dew point, bruh? But again, that's actually not bad. These numbers here, I have it right here. So it was their top five for righties. That number is 56.6% of barrels for righties go out. To give you an idea, right, if you're in that bottom five park factor, those numbers are below four.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door. After that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Would you
be a good sport and indulge us and just tell us a little more? Let me tell you something about
In This League.
That legitimately like is fantasy impact, right? So if you're telling me bottom five park factor equals sub 40% home run per barrel, and I'm like, wait, but we just got, assuming again the same conditions repeat, a top five ballpark. So that's part of why I'm into Teoscar, because if you mix that his power stats with that home run to barrel rate, you're talking about a guy who's going to far exceed, this guy's going to end up in the high 30s. And is anyone going to be too shocked? No, but they're going to say, well, maybe Seattle's not so bad.
That'd actually be interesting too if he were more like Bobby Witt, if he were more of a pull hitter. He actually, ironically, is a pretty good spreader across the field, except another fun thing that kind of matches what you were saying as well. If you look at expected home runs by different ballparks, obviously those are like if the guy played in that park the whole time. But three more homers in Seattle over Toronto for Teoscar based on the hitter that he is. So, you know, if you want to simplify dumb way of looking at what John was even saying on a much more breakdown basis of barrels per home run, You can see there's even a lift in Seattle based on the type of hitter that he is, that he would have in Seattle.
He had 52 barrels. He had 52 barrels in not a full season. So what if he puts up a 68 barrel season and he plays better than the 50% we've seen? All of a sudden, again, he's hitting 35 dongs and you're getting him at a really great price.
Yeah, and you said 55% barrel are going out.
Right. 56% of barrel home run. That was the actual stat. It also is pretty much in line with the league average. You know, Toby is one of the guys who kind of was introducing that. Looking for around just a shade over 50%. Again, you can't necessarily equate these things and say, oh, this player is lucky because he had 75% as many home runs as barrels. Because, again, this is something in the more granular work I've been doing. Guys, this stuff really matters. It's worth a tangent. There's the hulking power stats, Teoscar, but there's also these pulled barrels that we have to count. Andrés Giménez, my gosh, who else does this crap? Jeremy Peña, Tommy Edman, right? So even though these are not guys I would describe as power hitters, those players have some of my safest power floors because they pull the ball. You know, they
also
pull their barrels.
This guy was hurt and he came back too soon. He was hurt 6 games in last year, came back too soon and had 2-3 weeks of just crap performance too, because he came back too quick. And he was up and down there as well. So, you know, throw that in on top. So these numbers aren't even perfect for him.
He's a
because he had
stud.
That bad.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a legit. His, again, I do all this granular angles and power stat because I work on these home run derby stuff. It's for modeling when the season starts. His numbers hold up against all scrutiny as far as power goes. And if you put it, if you're saying that the context is good, there's a chance, again, that he's like a 40 home run guy. And we're not really seeing it because the ballpark is no good, right? But we're just looking at it with a different lens.
Yeah.
It's interesting. That's been my struggle. This has been a lot of good confirmation on it. All right. We're going to have to definitely pick it up on as we move to these next names. We're going back up to John. Number two, I agree with this one. Luis Robert with the White Sox is the struggle. Yeah. Bogman and I have him close. On an overall perspective, I have him higher on positionally as well. I'm trying to get back into the buyback, but what has made Luis Robert so difficult to rank and value for you, John?
His smile and the injuries, right? So you want it quick. This one's really quick. My heart is broken. One of the things that I struggle with besides injuries is kind of separating, not say emotionally, but emotionally from getting smoked on a first round pick, right? I got smoked on a first round pick. And you can't help but think if I didn't take him at whatever 14 overall or 17 overall in a turn, wherever I was taking him last year, and I replace it with a much better pick, I might have made this much money. He doesn't stay on the field. And then even though the little bit he was on the field, I mean, 400 plate appearances is like good but not great. But if you prorate that, 12 homers, 11 steals is just not going to do it. So I feel like not only do we need health, but we also need like more than what we've seen. So as much as I want to believe in like all the greatness that we've seen in flashes, I think I'm pumping the brakes on Robert.
Okay, let me ask you something. Where do you have Robert?
Teoscar or Robert?
Well, apples to apples, I believe Teoscar will outperform him, but you don't have to make that decision in the draft, right? You don't have to make that decision in the draft. Chris, you know what's funny? Being this is the first time I've ever published rankings, maybe I should have talked to people like yourself with a little more experience. What do you do with him? What I've been doing is sliding him back to the back of the second round where I know I can't get him, and I know people that are following my rankings won't get him without saying he's like the 80th outfielder, right? Because I don't believe that. You know what I mean? I don't think he's outfielder 80, but I don't think you draft him. So I'm putting him to the back, you know, I'm putting him in a spot where I'm trying not to disrespect the potential, but I'm making sure that I'm not drafting.
The Teoscar one's interesting, but like I wanted to throw out like another guy's never played 100 games, like Robert versus Buxton. Like what? Like if I had to tell you, you have
Robert
to take,
is just Buxton that has not jaded me yet. That was my whole argument
but again,
here.
3 years. First year 2020. Obviously was a shortened year. The next 2 years, he's not played 100 games. Here's my point. If you have to, let me look on this list here. Robert has NFBC of 46. Fantasy Pros, he is 90. Let's call him 60 for argument's sake here for a second. Let's call him 60. So that is the last pick in the fifth round, first pick in the sixth round. You have to take, let's call it fifth round Luis Robert, or you have to take ninth round Byron Buxton or 10th round Byron Buxton at this point, but like ninth round Byron Buxton or fifth round Luis Robert. Who are you going with and why? And like, where, you know, like, what is a separator Robert has from an injury perspective over Buxton at this point? Is he worth the
it's just
more
years.
Stolen bases that you get? Is he worth more of the stolen bases or not?
No. I like Buxton in a vacuum because I can't differentiate. So then when you add in, plus we have never seen Lubob carry us in a power sense like that, right? A lot of that is wish casting. We've seen bursts, but we've never seen, I mean, again, Buxton has put up a 47 home run, 640 plate appearance pace. That's a single season with 47 dongs. That is determinative power, right? That's like league leading type power, short of Aaron Judge, but depending on what league you're playing. So for me,
over that same period,
go.
I'm roughly doing it because you can essentially just add 2021 and 22, and I'll minus a little bit. That number over that time is roughly 23 homers, 16 stolen bases, call it 90-90, and probably close to 300 batting average on average.
Yeah,
so that is
307, 96, 99. Hey, well, if you're looking at Fangraphs, you could use the shift key to split, and they give you little totals.
Yeah, I was just doing it by eye. Yeah. And so then it's like awesome, 22 and 16 or something. So that's his 162 game split over that time.
Yeah.
I'll actually be honest with you, that we're talking about it now, he's actually going to probably be more difficult for me, because when you start to look at separators of him versus Teoscar or him versus even Buxton in that standpoint, to talk yourself into Robert as, what were you talking, like a second round pick? To talk a second or third round pick over a guy like even stupid Buxton or Adolis Garcia or something like that. Like, I just don't get why he would get a pass of an argument, because why? He's 24 years old, 25 years old, and he's only had a couple years of being an utter disappointment every single season, and Buxton's had more? Like, okay, the walk's like a duck. Like, it's starting to get that path. Why he's being treated differently than some of these other guys off of maybe a higher batting average and stolen bases, I don't know, a little bit, I get lower.
It's funny too, you look at every single projection system, and Buxton is ahead in home runs, RBIs, and runs, and just barely in stolen bases. And so you're really paying that extra price for Robert, you know, if this is just projections, obviously, but you're paying that extra price for Robert just for a little bit of batting average is what it essentially, two stolen bases, three stolen bases, a little bit of batting average, right? So it's one of those things where, I don't know, they're both great upsides. You obviously can't roster them both. So who would you rather roster? I think you guys are right. I think I'm being talked into this a little bit, but I think I'd rather take Buxton later.
Yep.
I don't know. I feel like I like Robert a little more just because, like I said before, I'm not jaded on Robert yet. This year, if he doesn't play 100 games, I'm done.
I think a lot like
Buxton with me. So it's kind of that's kind of where I stand. But you can squint and see that upside. And I think, you know, obviously NFBC is going to go higher, stuff like that, because you can squint and see that upside. You know, you can put all those numbers together and it's 47 homers if he played a full season and all that stuff. But
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The snozzberries taste like snozzberries. I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Littering and...
Littering and...
In this league,
break it down.
Is that ever going to happen? You know, it's a big question right now. So
I think it's interesting. Like, I like Buck, and this is coming from a standpoint. I'm not trying to make a case to not take Robert and take other people. I like Robert more than you guys. I like Robert more. I think I am the high on Fantasy Pros right now on his rank. But like, I don't think I was building in enough of this risk concern that like Buxton is built into my brain. Jacob DeGrom built into my brain. I don't think Roberts was built into my brain enough that like his 162 game pace is good. It's not elite. And it comes with more risks outside of the batting average being really good. It's just something to consider. Like what you said before, where you're like, hey, you wouldn't take Robert and Buxton. I don't think that was in my brain where I would be like, oh my God, like the red flag of Robert wasn't in my brain where I need to red flag him, and maybe he needs to be more red flag because he hasn't crossed it. And And I also, the like, I just don't know how many years, like, what is Bogdan? It seems like 3 years to you is the marker, because why Robert gets a pass and Buxton doesn't, like, I don't.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, you know, Buxton has been playing longer. He's been hurt more. And yeah, we've been talking about this more. 2017 was the last time he played 100 games, right? So, you know, Robert wasn't even up at that point. So it's just a longer tracker. Like I said, Robert is Buxton, but I'm not jaded by him yet because it's three seasons, you know, and one of those seasons also obviously was the COVID year. So it's really two seasons. I think in that, what did he play in that COVID year? 56 to 60?
56. Yeah. It was essentially like a full season.
He played in the COVID
year. And that was his rookie year too. So that was weird. Got hurt last year. Banged.
He also had two injuries in the minors. I just want to point out.
Yeah.
He had a wrist injury. He had two injuries. He, like, if no one remembers this, but his first two minor league years, guy didn't hit a home run.
That's a great point.
And then he had this 30-30 season because he got injured twice in the minors. Once when he first came over, and then one was like a slide in. So I
did
mean,
you say it was wrist by any chance? Did you say
it was a wrist. It was a wrist.
I think you just convinced me to lower him.
I've been tracking injuries because, you know, they can be kind of hard to track, and I've been finding Fox Sports, though it's not perfect, does have a really good injury player page. I've had to go and backtrack, like, you know, you kind of have to hand check some of it with Sports Edge and whatever, FanGraphs, see if they miss games. Now, they're not IL stints. They're instances of missed games, which is even better. IL stints, 12 instances, 12 for Lou Bob last year alone. 12 last year alone. The last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the last 6 are wrist related.
So it's well, and that again, like, that's most power. People don't remember, he slid into second, hurt his wrist, and that sharpened some of the minor league stuff. What was Buxton's, by the way?
I was looking at, it was
186.
Like, yeah, well, if you really want the full one, it's very funny because in that thread that I tweeted, somebody tweeted a response of during a Twins broadcast, the color commentator lists off all the injuries he's had in the past like 2 years. Dude, ooh, and it's ugly. He goes,
oh, it's absurd.
Wrist, left thigh, right thigh, left groin, right groin, toe. Yeah. It's unbelievable. And Buxton has a really long list also because, again, they're being really, really cautious with him. So, like, if he gets hit with a pitch, instead of 2 days, he's getting 4 days, right? And you can't bench him if you're in a weekly league. It just can be so tough with these guys.
Yeah, the Robert one's interesting. All right. Bogman, you're number two, O'Neill Cruz. And I see why. He's all over the board. Again, this is another one of those volatility guys that I'm higher on. His projections are through the roof. Something I've cited a whole bunch. If you wanted to go by steamer projections, the closest marker you can get to his steamer projections is a first round player. Like, by steamer, he's a first round player. It's Kyle Tucker like numbers. Bad X definitely brings him down. He's volatile. I'm shocked actually that NFBC has him as low as they do based on the upside, which seems kind of weird. He's at 71. He's lower on Fantasy Pros. Yahoo's a little bit higher. I have him higher, but Bogman, you're kind of with me. So what's your O'Neill Cruz struggle?
Yeah. I mean, it's, does he deserve to be this high is basically what my struggle is too. Cause I am at 55. Like you said, I'm higher. Yeah, I think once again, you're highest on Fantasy Pros and you don't have a ton of those guys. Because I look through a lot of players and it's just a couple of guys that we were talking about. I basically here want you guys to talk me into O'Neill Cruz and make sure that I shouldn't move him because obviously, you know, young player, like you said,
because you're pretty high.
I want to stay. I want you guys to convince me not to move him down the list of shortstops and below the guys that I have below him. Because I have him ahead of some good players. I had him ahead of Seager, Swanson, and Edmund. I have him just below Bichette, Tatis, and Lindor. So I have him in that, like, you know, if he plays this well, he's going into that Bichette, Tatis, Lindor kind of tier. I have him kind of in his own tier right now. I'm trying to figure out if I should move him, if I should keep him there, or do I need to move him down? Because obviously the situation in Pittsburgh is bad. You know, there's not a lot of help in this lineup at all, especially if they trade Brian Reynolds. He's going to be hitting leadoff, so you know, ample opportunities for at-bats, ample opportunities for stolen bases, which is why I have him there. But if they were to drop him in the order, maybe he steals less. I don't know. Like, it's a bad spot for him to be in. He is a great player, and he is very volatile, though. So that's kind of – I can squint and see it. That's why I have him just below those really, really stud shortstops. But I don't know. Should I be lowering him is basically my question on him.
I'm curious too where John is at that because, like, his hard hit stuff obviously, you know, broke Statcast. And It's all there. Right. It's funny, when I was first looking at this, it was very reminiscent of Teoscar Hernandez, except the problem when you look at Teoscar versus O'Neal Cruz is he does not provide you the safety on batted ball stuff as far as like his batting average. Like his, this guy, O'Neal Cruz, XBA is like 17th percentile and XWOBA 36th percentile, where Teoscar was high up there. But they share like K and whiff percentage issues. O'Neal Cruz barrels up the ball a good amount, struggled early, but that, you know, that back half of the year where I think he got his batting average up, the strikeout percentage was under 30%. You know, those are the positives that you look at. And the way he hits the ball and when he makes contact, the guy is going to hit 20 plus. We got to believe the stolen bases are going to keep going, but he is volatile. And I'm playing on the side of high potential in a lot of these drafts. But John, is this a guy that, you know, you're teetering around?
Well, interesting. Again, I was really scared of my perception of like the discipline stuff, although, you know, the high K rate. So it was very easy for me just on the surface to pass. Doing my rankings, they'll be out in a week or so, right after the Super Bowl. I got to O'Neal Cruz just this morning, and I turned around on him this morning. And okay. Scott actually mentioned the name that matters the most to me in this exercise, and it's Francisco Lindor. Check this out, everyone. These are projections. Francisco Lindor, 250. O'Neal Cruz, 250. Runs, 82, 84. Ribbies, 86, 82. So slight edge Lindor. Home runs, 25, 27. Edge to O'Neal Cruz. And then stolen bases, 13, 19. So quite literally, nose to nose. However, Lindor's is at 666. The leprechaun. Plate appearances, and O'Neal is only at the high 500s. So I think it's 590. Yeah,
550 on Bat X with a 240 batting average, 22.
Again, noise. Yeah. Point being, even the experts are admitting pound for pound, he's every bit the player kind of Lindor is. And I was looking into the track record again, you know, maybe this part of my blind spot. I try not to track these guys through the minors too much because I don't want to fall too much in love with them. But I think I saw something like, I don't know, 1,400 plate appearances. This guy had a good batting average, right? In the minors, he's always had a good average. He's had swing and miss, but swing and miss is not bad discipline. His K rate is not bad. I want the guy that hits the ball 120 miles an hour to swing the bat, right? There's nothing worse than a guy that goes up there, can mash, but he doesn't swing, right? We need more aggression. So
that was Goldie in the beginning of his career.
Point being,
plenty of guys. Yeah.
Man, I feel like I might have written off O'Neal Cruz as like this wild swinging strikeout machine after just a couple hundred plate appearances. And maybe I shouldn't have, because again, the upside is, and it's again, it's not like wish casted upside. Hate to knock Lou Bob and drag him in the mud one more time. But this is not like we're asking for something that we've never really seen, even though he's played. This guy has played and shown us, like, you know, his 600 plate appearance pace. This is O'Neal Cruz. 235, so again, a bit low, but that's the only hiccup. 77, 92, 29, and 16. I mean, these are monstrous numbers. These are second round, kind of early third round, right, returns for a guy that, I mean, you're getting, gosh, next to Tommy Edman, they're not the same player. And then once you see him fall, because Scott mentioned these guys, these types of players do fall. Buxton and Cruz, they can fall. Once he's near Xander Bogaerts, God in heaven, smash O'Neal Cruz. What are we waiting for, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. I've got him above Edmund. I've got him above Bogaerts.
But do you think the average and the strikeout stuff kind of normalized to the track record? Is that what you are?
I think it's going to be, for the most part, I still think he's going to be a near 30% K guy, but like Fernando Tatis can make that stuff work. I think he can. Here's my problem with O'Neal Cruz and why, like, I'm even concerned about where I might have him is the team context. Like, he's just limited in run and RBI opportunities, which that's my problem. And like, am I buying a player?
Dude, you signed G-Man Choi. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but yeah. Am I a player? Have I bought into a player that is two counting stats heavy? And like, you don't want to buy a two category player in the first 50 picks. That's a problem. And batting average is okay. Projections. Runs don't look good, and RBI don't look good because no one's going to be on base, especially when they trade.
Especially
Ryan
if
Reynolds.
He's the leadoff hitter, the RBIs are cooked. Yeah,
we love home runs and stolen bases, but I do think there is a kind of a limit, and that's what I have to kind of rebat on that. That's actually my struggle. I actually have also a struggle because I'm very high on him.
But if he's runs, homers, stolen bases, and his average is okay, now you're only missing RBI. That's why I keep, you know, flip-flopping, and I don't want to spend way more time on O'Neal Cruz. We've described what he is, but I mean that's where that's where the struggle comes. And I don't know. I think I'm probably not moving him. I think I probably got him where I have him, and I'm not going to be messing with him too much, maybe in the overall move him down, but not.
Okay, let me do this for you then real quick. John, Boggs has Seager and Tatis and Cruz close. Who would you rather have? Corey Seager on the bounce back or Cruz?
For me, format. If you need steals, you got to have Cruz. In point leagues, I'd rather have Seager. Like head to head, I'd rather have Seager. I think the hit tool is.
Want
to
try a free sample?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, time to consult the online experts.
You only eat after you're walking 10,000 steps.
Stop it.
They don't know your body, only you do. Signos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Signos.com, Signos.com, with code SPARK, Signos.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playmcd.com for full details and amoe.playmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
More consistent. And I've just been toying around with some of the estimated numbers on this poll on the shift. I mean, the guy stands to...
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's not what you did, son, that angers me, son. It's who you did it to.
Who? Nobody?
Nobody.
ITL.
Yeah, he was one of the most shifted players in the baseball.
I know it's been beaten to death, and I know it's not, it's nothing original, but he hits the ball on a rope. He pulls it a ton right where the shift is. Like, it's funny, people are like, should we react to the shift being removed? Yeah, it was so effective that they had to disallow it. Like, there's a reason, you know?
It'll be interesting, though, the first time a team utilizes, I don't know if you've seen this, utilizes the five-man infield and the two-man outfield that they can do. There's been some talk that they can bring a infielder in and they can take out an outfielder instead of a shift. The first time someone does that, we'll all have a conversation and that'll be fun.
I've been really trying to get man in motion because I'm like the notorious rule bender. So like I'm the guy, if I'm in your fantasy league, that you have to change rules because of, right? Because I found like a loophole. So the first thing I thought was, I wonder if you had somebody technically obeying the rules one step to the side of second base. Once the pitch is released, the ball is live. You can't mandate anything. Could you just see motion? Could we see defensive motion?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
The 49ers of infield. Yeah.
Because I'll tell you what, if a guy starts at the standard shortstop and starts a little jog and times it with the pitcher, all of a sudden you're going to have a full, you'll have the regular shift back. And again, I'm just brainstorming this stuff. We have to see it in practice.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's also, I've been cautioning people. Even though I put out a
little, we'll get a preview during spring training too.
Oh yeah, no, that's actually a really good point. That's one thing worth watching for.
Absolutely.
Yeah. My second one, and we are not getting to five, by the way. We're gonna get to third, and then we'll just mention. Actually, probably I think in the next round, let's mention all three of our guys, and then you can each pick the three that you have left, and you can pick one that you want to focus on. Mine is Shane Bieber, and this is pretty simple. Shane Bieber lost all the stuff except what actually mattered on the stat sheet, like. Everything underlying last year, velo was down, the spin was down. He was a sell, get him out of here. But he never really like struggled. Like he never got to the point where anyone would be able to celebrate on, oh, selling off Shane Bieber was the smartest thing that I ever did. He was still like relatively top flight and he was still getting stuff together. He had 13 wins, hit 200 innings. His K numbers were down, but he had a 2.88 ERA. Despite all of the drops, he still produced. But now looking at this year, I just don't know where to go. So this is finally an instance where I am the low man on the totem pole. I've got him outside my top 60. NFBC, he's 58. Fantasy Pros, ADP or ECR, I guess, is 45. Yahoo, he's 51. I've got him lower than Bogman. Bogman's got him higher for a lot of those reasons. I just don't know what to do because I feel like, okay, you got away with it this past year. but long-term declining fastball and declining spin rates across the board, that's a warning flag of buying in. And I don't know if I want to buy back in, yet he curbed the whole thing, John. So I don't know. I don't know. This is a true difficult, how do you rank? And Shane Bieber is a tough one for me because I kind of move him up and down. And I've had guys pass him, and he seems to be this marker where I'm like, oh, yeah, I like this guy more. And then I'll just like,
yeah.
I feel like he's become the marker where I get more excited about someone else, and I don't have him as a top 15 SP.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's one of the guys with the downgrade in offense we've seen, and the net zero gain, right? The pitchers that have to get pushed up then if there's less hitting. I think without the strikeout stuff, and you absolutely nailed it, Welsh, this has been my kind of bread and butter, some of the work I like to do, the granular pitching stuff, absolute degradation across the board. The four-seamer is, the next stop is the trash can, right? Year over year, 94 miles an hour, 92 and a half, down to 91 as it's steepened, right? So not to get too much into the VAA stuff, but you want your fastball as flat as possible. That's a rising fastball. That has gone in the wrong direction each of the 3 years, going from 12, which is very good, to 15, which is below average. So his fastball now is not good, right? So the Bieber fastball, which has gone from like, it's passable, is no longer any good. He does get by in control. His secondary stuff is still ridiculously good, right? So both of his secondary pitches have a 39% whiff rate. So that's where some of the confusion comes from. Like, man, why is he so good? Because the off-speed stuff is still elite, elite, elite. However, when you throw the fastball as much as he does, or it's, you know, the main component of your arsenal, it's gonna hurt that overall K rate. So I've just been, not saying I'm punting it back, but there's so much quality pitching. Again, I think one of my major takeaways from the ranking stuff, doing it like this, is you do not need to take any early pitching. Because come like pick like 50 to 80, it is just a wealth. There is just a wealth of starting pitching of guys who are kind of being overlooked. You know, again, Wheeler's going right next to Bieber, but the guys technically on NFBC going after him, I'd rather have Gausman. I'd rather have Castillo. I'd rather have Manoa. I'd rather have Gallen. I'd rather have Javier. I'd probably rather have Musgrove. Believe it or not, I'd rather have Framber Valdez, and I'd rather have Tristan McKenzie. Right, so
yeah, that's pretty dramatic because I have Javier above, and that's an interesting one that you mentioned him, because I have Gausman and Javier above, but Bogman, you have Gausman and Javier below.
Yeah, it's funny because a guy that I'm going to talk about in a second here, I have just ahead, and to me, that's the end of the tier at 14. And then we get into Bieber, Urias, Gausman, Javier, Gallen, Castillo, a lot of the guys you just mentioned that are all the next tier to me. I have Bieber at the top of that tier. And the reason is because there's a difference between throwers and pitchers. And this guy is absolutely a pitcher. He's made it work with declining stuff. And also what we said about, and this is way more rare, obviously, what we said about Witt, like, what is to say that doesn't tick up a little bit? We see guys go through tick ups and downs in their career. So if the speed and spin rate comes back just a little bit,
he's
could
only
be
27,
even,
mind you. He feels right. old. Doesn't he feel old?
He's
well, this
a lot
is
of
like
innings.
Clayton Kershaw. I think like Clayton Kershaw was like 29 and things are decreasing. My only problem with that, Boggs, I agree. We have nothing.
It's just a
like,
maybe. It's not
the
a.
The most uncommon thing is velo coming back off of multiple year decreases without, like, we didn't hear like he's going to like Driveline or he's working with a new pitching coach or he's just, like, we don't have any of that. Like, he's an analytical guy. He's doing his own stuff. Like, I can't make the, and I understand
his
where you're coming
X-Fip
from.
X-Fip and Sierra was still really
but
good.
But making
like,
the bet that he'll improve when he's not.
I'm not saying that he'll improve. I'm saying that it's a possibility, you know, and I'm not making that bet at all. He played great with decreased velocity, with decreased spin rate last year. And I just don't know, is it going to raise up? Probably not. But is it going to completely fall off and he's going to be a trash pitcher? Because that's what everybody said was going to happen, and it didn't. So to me, he's still like, he has proven it to me. I'm going to hold on until he falls off. It's one of those. I know this is preemptive for almost everyone, and you can't say it's not preemptive because it is. His numbers are great. So it's definitely preemptive. So I'm just not there yet. Like, I'll believe it when I see it in a bad note, just like I like to do for guys to jump up as well. So
yeah, I think he's tough because results versus under the hood speak two different things, and seeing velo and spin rate decreases are alarming. Yet he walked less than, you know, his whiff rate went down, yet he stopped walking people. He commanded his pitches better, even when they were less. It's just, he's an anomaly. All right.
Yeah, you want a good stat on him? So Shane Bieber led, he was second in major leagues in money starts, right? That's my thing. But quality starts, we all know we're dumb, but easy to remember. Money starts, 7 innings minimum, 2 earned runs maximum, right? So like, I kind of turned it into a very easy thing to for us to number sure. on. He had 12 of those. Now, he was second. Sandy Alcantara had 20. Okay, so just,
good
just
Lord.
Just forget that. But listen, Bieber, right, the guy, if we're wondering, right, 12, he led the majors in that. Those are the starts. And in particular, I'd say head-to-head. So this is where do you slot this guy? And I'm like, I don't know if I really want him in Roto because I don't know if the strikeouts are going to be there. But in things like point leagues where you really get proportionately rewarded for distance, quality starts, wins, and that kind of stuff, Bieber, it needs to be moved up because nobody does that. I mean, that's just unbelievable. That's uncanny, man. He was so good. That's 39% of his starts. He went 7-2. I mean,
yeah, that's why he's on the list.
Yeah, that's why. That's why he's tough. That's why he is difficult. All right, so these are the last three. We each have three. John, we're going to go to yours. You had three guys left, so name off the three and then pick the player that you want to focus on.
Yeah, okay. Mine are all, head scratchers. They're pretty easy. Ozzie Albies, the injury plus some split stuff. Is he going to lose the 2-hole to Michael Harris? Then I had Corbin Carroll. That's the one I want to talk about, but I want you to talk about it because of it's a prospect thing. Wander Franco was my last one, easier for me to sum up in that. It sounds a little bit like Lou Bob, almost. Big shine, big talent, big pedigree, all the wish casting in the world. And though we've seen talent and production, we have not seen fantasy glory. And I think, people get caught in the weeds with this, right? Well, all Wander Franco needs to do is lift more, hit it more, and steal more bases, and he'll be great for 5x5. And it's like, well, that's everything. Yeah. And
I need to do is lose a bunch of weight, and I'll be skinny.
We're doing that, but it's kind of true. I don't like to, I think this is a big flaw of fantasy players. I think they try and project these adjustments on very good hitters. If the guy's like a 300 major league baseball hitter, I don't assume he's going to be looking to change that,
yeah.
right? So, again, I don't know if Wander Franco has the power speed tools to carry us in the price at Roto. I'm not even touching him in Roto this year because shortstop, there's a plethora. Even guys like later on again,
Only two things is he did in April hit like 4 or 5 homers, stole a couple bases, and started to project out at looking like a 25-20 guy. And then he got hurt and everything fell apart. I just got him in our Fantasy Pros mock at 115. And I took him as my
okay, see, that's great. Again, the
that's
price
where he's going.
Is – I think this year, maybe more than ever, really feels like there's so much. Maybe it's because of the shifting in the era, right, of the offensive like environment that we're having this pitchers that used to be all the way up and now moving to the back, and we're kind of having this flow of very wide min and max picks. So to put a bone with me, Corbin Carroll, gosh, if you look at the Minor League Baseball Fangraphs page, you understand what we like. He had such a small cup of coffee in the majors. It's hard for me to prioritize him. So my question is pretty easy. Like, Welsh, is this guy the whatever 25-25 guy everyone's kind of hoping he is, right? Steamer has him at 17-14, but it's under 500 plate appearances. So again, if you get him to a full complement, he's over 20-20.
Yeah, I mean, I'm this is going to be a rough one for me. Is it going to be a good one or a rough one for me this year? Because here's what I'm adamant about. I'm adamant that his stolen bases are projected lower on every single spot. Every single, even the highest of high Steamer is under projecting at stolen bases. I'm confident that. I said this to me and Scott White, we're getting into it. He has never had an under 200 ISO at any level of any professional spot except rookie ball. As an 18-year-old, rookie ball, complex league. It's the only time he's ever had an under 200 ISO. He makes monster contact. He hits homer. He had 28 homers this past year, and it's the physicality. If he were 20 pounds bigger, no one would have the concerns. They wouldn't. It's that he's a little bit skinnier, but he's jacked. He's built. He's a mechanic as a swinger. He's not 5'10", 165 anymore. I was just around him a couple months ago. He's probably pushing 6 foot now, and he's probably around 180 pounds, and it's jacked muscle, and he understands hitting. So my personal belief...
Well, fat muscle like I have. For the record.
Yeah, no, not like if I were to like flex and you would
not
see
like
that.
Us. Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Look, the muscle pushed out the fat. No, this is like the guy is getting jacked for his size, but he is also he's just a master of his swing. He's worked through swings with other players. I think he'd be a great coach someday. I believe that the homers will get there and that we're not going to be as concerned. So, like, am I going to say he's a 20 homer, 25 guy? He's going to be Bobby Witt this year? I definitely think it's possible. I really,
Listen, real quick. I just looked this up. The lowest qualified player with an ISO over 200 had 22 homers. That's the low total. So if he gets to that 200 ISO, you're looking at least 20 homers.
And in 32 games in the majors this past year, he had a 240 ISO with the Diamondbacks that was out there. So
and he didn't and even I'd get hot throw out, once.
And also throw out, he's the fastest player in baseball. He's top 1 percentile sprint speed in all of baseball. So to project him under 20 stolen bases, I think is silly. It's going to come down, does he have any bad streaky stuff where he can't get out there and he's not hitting? I just don't think it's going to happen. I think he's a top-end player, and that's why I just feel more confident.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome in this league.
I love you.
Ready to party!
In stuff season. Stuff and things.
And hopefully we'll get John on some Twitch streams and we'll be back in season. Johnny boy, thank you, my friend, and appreciate you taking
you
the
guys,
time.
Man, I really do always have a place in my heart. Love you guys.
Thanks, Johnny.
And there you go, friendos. That is the episode. Thank you to John for taking the time out. Very good stuff. John's always got incredible analysis. And I just like chatting with him. He's a great listen. And go and support him. Follow him on Twitter, John Legeza, and wherever the hell he is going and all the chaos that he is doing. I'm there for it. I'm there for the John chaos because that's what I love. Coming up this week. Now, Bogman, I have to ask you, Yahoo did open their platform.
But they're not open for drafts.
And guess what? You want to know something funny?
Mantrax is.
Fantrax, baby. Fantrax.com/inthisleague. Fantrax has been open the whole time. ESPN open, and they might as well not have. Yahoo opened up their ranks, and they're not even open for mock drafts. But Fantrax is. Use our promo code. Shout out to them. And we're doing our next mock draft over there. And what are we? I think this is the Roto one, right?
Yeah, we're back to Roto. Yep.
15-team Roto mock draft 5.0. If you're a brand new ITL Army member for the first time and you're L tier above, hit us up, and we will. Make as long as you can make it, we'll guarantee you a spot. So if you sign up as an LT or a captain and you're like, hey, I can make that draft, I want to be in, bam, you got a spot. We want to make sure that we give some priority to that. That is coming up later in the week. We've got some big episodes coming up as well. I can tell you it is booked. Next week, we're going to be talking to Derek Carty about projections. So he's going to be coming on. We got more mock drafts. Hell Week is coming up with all our rank previews. So it's pretty cool. And I can officially tell you starting next week, I will be on Rates and Barrels on Tuesdays moving forward. That's official. Me, Eno, and DVR, maybe variations of that. It is going to be a dynasty prospect future looking forward episode that I will be a part of. So you guys can find me over there as well as I think we're going 3 days a week on Fantasy Pros. So Fantasy Pros, Rates and Barrels, and right here with us. And CBS. I forgot about that as well. And CBS. And of course over at In This League. So thank you guys for the support. InThisLeague.com on the Patreon. Do that. Promo code ITL on Underdog. You know the link on Fantrax. Hook the ITL up. We will love you. I'm excited to play some best ball with you guys, so hopefully you want to do it with us over at Underdog Fantasy. Otherwise, Bogman and myself will talk to you later in the week for Mock Draft 5.0. Goodbye, friends.
See you.